Hi everyone, this is Tim. Welcome to North and South Podcast. This is a politics episode. It's my honour to get John Rice on, who's going to introduce himself in a moment. And he is an independent councillor, or someone who's standing to be an independent councillor in future local elections in the Sefton area, which is very, very close to Liverpool. Now, I've had a few people on in the past who have been independent councillors. I spoke to Bobby Brennan about why he left the local Sefton Labour Party. So, John, thank you for coming on board. It's been a while me trying to get you, so great to finally speak to you. But do you want to just introduce yourself and say what you are and what you do?
Yeah, I'm standing as an independent candidate in Lineker Ward in the forthcoming local elections. Why I'm standing? Well, basically, it's the sad old faces, year in, year out. The local people not seeing any real change for the better, despite repeated pledges from the same old faces. Basically, my background is I was a very active Labour activist in the past, became a Labour councillor in 1999, stood down in 2008. My awakening to the European Union happened whilst I was in the Labour Party, when I was the treasurer of the Merseyside ECLP, which is the European Constituency Labour Party. And when I was there, initially it was under Ken Stewart, MEP, before he passed away. Then it was under Richard Corbett, and I was very active in it, the Richard Corbett's campaign in the by-election that took place. And over the next couple of years, I attended regular ECLP meetings in the old Trade Union Resource Centre in Liverpool, and basically became more and more sceptical towards what the EU was. Not Europe, I'm a passionate European, but it's just I'm not somebody who believes in the bureaucracy of, and ultimately that led me in the end through that, and also through genuinely having a friendship with, when I was campaigning for the Labour Party in Derby Ward, regularly I'd bump into Paul Nuttall, MEP, as he became, but he was, at that time, he was still a local Tory. He lived in the ward, and I bumped
into him. Now, he later became leader of UKIP, didn't he? But yeah, at the time, he was a former Conservative potential councillor who then became involved in UKIP, didn't he?
Yeah, that's exactly it. He stood actually as a Tory against me in 2001, I think. Basically, through bumping into each other on literally on the knockers from time to time round where he lived off by Derby Park, I got to know him and I liked the fella. So he basically asked me in 2010 whether I'd stand in Derby Ward for UKIP. And at that time, it was woman and hour, and I thought, oh, well, what the hell? So I jumped in, not because I believed in what UKIP were espousing in its entirety, but I think the truth of it was I knew the EU question had to be put to the people. Once, one way or another, a referendum had to be held. And, you know, I can honestly say, 2016, on the night of the referendum, I went to bed honestly believing that the Remain had won. Without a doubt, I'd gone to bed, and I, like any political activist, you have to respect what the outcome is. And I went, and at that time, which was about just after midnight, I think, the predictions were it was Remain, and I went to bed, and I think I listened to Radio 4 in the morning about 6 o'clock, and it basically told me what the outcome had been. And I suppose I could honestly say I was a bit in shock that, you know, Vote Leave had won. Whether I believed in what the pledges of Vote Leave, and whether that had swayed some people, but I think the truth of it was a binary referendum. It was either we remain or we leave, and people voted to leave. And I think there was fibs and acts of mendacity on both sides when it comes to leave and remain. The facts still speak for themselves. I doubt now, we're now getting where we're not far off 7 years since the vote leave outcome. And I bet you now, just as it was before, I bet the European Union's accounts have still not been audited, and I bet you they still haven't been tallied off altogether. And I'm not talking about the last 7 years. I'm not when I was actively involved in European politics, I think there was about 25 years of them not being audited and not being able to, the accountants not being able to actually tee them off. Anyway, as I said, I stood for UK. I suppose was involved in Brexit politics for the next few years, up to the 2015 general election. And once the coalition collapsed and the Tories won, and of course David Cameron promised, in order to have a Tory majority, he promised Brexiteers in his own party and the wider populace that he'd deliver a referendum, totally believing always that he would support the Remain option. But he said he would do it, and true to his word, he did actually legislate for it, and there was a referendum. And so I then stayed out of politics for a few years, only really getting involved again last year, 2022. So I was out for 5-6 years. Never really ever took my finger off the pulse of what was going on, but more a backseat driver. That was probably a fraudulent slip. But I would probably say I was always a backseat spectator, if not driving, pretty much being interested enough to being willing to take the wheel if needed. How it came about that I stood again last year was basically the opportunity came to Ford Ward suspension in Sefton, the Labour Party in Ford Ward, because I'm active on the Church Road news, and I'm also on the A565.
Just to clarify that for listeners, John, we'll come back to Brexit later. So you were in the Labour Party, you came a bit disillusioned with the European project, we can come back to that later.
Yeah.
You got involved with the UKIP side because of the election, you wanted a referendum because of the bureaucratic concerns you had. Yeah. You then go out to politics, and then you come back in to stand as an independent. Now, the Ford Ward is one of the wards of Sefton. So do you want to just explain briefly what happened there, and just the people who might not be familiar with that?
Okay. I think it's fair to say from Harry Shuckman's article in The Post in December, 17th of December, December 21, in which he basically laid out how the ward had been suspended in the run-up to the selection process of the sitting councillor Liz Dowd, Peter Dowd's wife, the MP for Bootle's wife, and members were likely to deselect her. Rightly or wrongly, there was allegations made by the Member of Parliament, probably, to the regional party, and the regional party stepped in and suspended the ward, and the ward remains suspended 18 months later, and it's still suspended. It still hasn't chosen its candidate for the forthcoming local elections this time round. There is parallels here because, of course, Peter Dowd, when he was a councillor in Derby Ward, had Derby Ward's Labour Party suspended for a number of years because he believed he was going to be deselected. Strange that, isn't it?
Yeah. So what you're saying, for people who are listening, Peter Dowd is the current Bootle MP, which is it's one of the safest seats in the country.
Yeah.
And it's certainly, I think, the safest Labour seat in the country. I may be wrong now. But effectively, he used to be a councillor, and his wife is still a councillor in one of the wards. And what's happened is, when a ward is suspended, that is because someone makes a complaint to the Labour Party to stop things happening. And what you're saying is that's because deselections may well have been on the table. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And as I said, that came to the fore. As I said, I have been keeping my finger on the pulse of what's going on. I have still got loads of former comrades in the Labour Party who've kept me abreast of what's been going on since me leaving the party in 2009 through to the current time. You know, saying whilst there's a lot of faces that I don't know, it's strange that the upper echelons of politics are still the same motley crew as they were when I was there, when decisions were made. You'd question whether any common sense was being applied or whether it was just a case of keeping power to themselves. But, you know, the current leader, the current MP, the deputy leader, and the candidate for Ford Ward this time, Ian Moncair, you know, he's part of that group of five or six councillors, see it as their fiefdom. Bootle politics is their fiefdom, and as far as they are concerned, they are the lairds of Bootle, and as far as they're concerned, no one can shine a light on their dealings within the council or their dealings within the party. That's probably one of the reasons why last year I decided to run again. But at that time, it was in Netherton Oral Ward because the leader of the council was up for election. And there was some speaking truth to the populace by putting out leaflets explaining what was going on. Whether people took any notice, that's up to them. But everything that was in the leaflets was sourced. So therefore, it did make reference to Harry Shuffman's article. It made reference to various Liverpool Echo articles. And it was just basically bringing all these different things together so people could have a read. Ultimately, yeah, it probably made no difference whatsoever. But standing as an independent is not necessarily about turning a super tank around in a jiffy. Allegedly, it takes something like 5 miles for a super tanker to stop. The turnaround is about 20 miles. And I think ultimately, genuinely, I do think brutal and brutal politics, if it's ever going to be turned round, it needs someone to start urging the super tanker of brutal politics to turn round, to look at itself very intensely and to say, is this what the Labour Party is about? Is this what Labour politics is about now?
Just on the record, I'm in the Labour Party still for the national scene. And yeah, I've been fairly active in local Labour politics in the Bootle area. And let's be honest, a rocking horse would win an election in Bootle, in the council elections and in the MP elections as well. And I think there's a bigger picture here that you mentioned, and it's not just about stopping the tanker and turning it around as well. It's about shining light on that tanker. And
it is.
There is words get bandied about a lot in the Bootle area. They call it the Bootle Mafia. Certain people with the same surname seem to be very, very well represented in the local Labour Party. And I've been to meetings where literally there's quite a few people with the same surname winning votes when it matters, when it counts. And if you go in with any sense of probing or not necessarily being a nuisance, but just asking a few questions, it can be very, very Machiavellian, and you can turn on you quite quickly, dismiss you, not respond to your emails. And that's something that I've seen firsthand myself.
Look at, you know, the Bootle Labour Party and say to yourself, well, some things are obvious, you know, where you have the same surname. But then, of course, you've got people who've married. So we've got Trish Hardy, who's Ian Mayer's daughter. Of course, you've got Christine Mayer, who's Ian's wife. You've got Peter Dowd, the MP, whose wife, as I mentioned before, Liz Dowd, is a Ford Ward councillor. You've also got Marion Atkinson, who's Peter Dowd's niece. You've also got Sue Bradshaw and Paula Murphy in One's in Netherton and Oral, the other's in Molyneux. They're both relations of the Dowds as well. And then you've got the cronies. So you've got the nepotism, and then you've got the cronyism. People who famously, I won't name them, but people who know Labour politics will know that a Labour councillor going back for many, many years, although he's been he was sacked from St Oswald Ward many years ago, but was shoved in and Litherland. He once famously said, "It's money for old rope being on the council," because, and the other thing that you find is lots of people, there's quite a few people that I term chocolate teapots, who are councillors who say nothing, do nothing, take the money, take the allowances, and use that as virtually as a form of superannuation, a pension. And you've got a few of them, and whilst that continues, you've got other people out in the community who genuinely are champions. I'll mention their organisations. There's Bootle Action Group, there's the Friends of Derby Park, there's other groups across. Some of the people who are involved in that really should be local councillors. They're not following a party line, but what they are about is, well, let's make sure that your back alleys are clear. Let's make sure dog crap's being picked up and claimed by the council. Let's actually prosecute people who flight it. Let's actually prosecute people who let the dogs mess up the community for everyone else. And that's what it's, local politics should be about local issues. I'm not saying, well, what was a councillor 40, 50 years ago and what are they now? Well, the LEA, the way it's the education system now, very little to do with councillors now. Social services, well, all I'll say is, isn't Sefton Council doing well when it comes to social services? I think that, the recent Care Quality Commission, when they did their report, I think they only had to use the word inadequate and just keep on copying and pasting, because that's all they labelled the council inadequate.
Yeah. This is caring for the most vulnerable people in the community here as well, isn't it? Just to come in here, I'm hoping to speak to someone about that very issue. And as you say, with the schools, there's a lot of academisation now where it's effectively being privatised, the education system. Now, I've often said to a mutual friend of ours about what Mark Twain once said about politicians and underwear, and they need to be changed regularly for the same reason, because they soon start to smell. You get corruption, etc. Now, we have societies that are corrupt, where corruption is more overt. We have individuals who are quite corrupt, and they can only be in for a few years, and they're up to all kinds. And you just have to look at the national scene in the last few years to see what we've had to tolerate in this country recently. But a lot of these people in these positions, it's not necessarily an anti-Labour thing we're saying, because, I'm in the Labour Party for the national idea. But if you have areas of the country where you've got politicians and families in parties who are just there literally for decades, and if you try to put your head above the parapet, I've had a councillor who left the Labour Party on this podcast who said that once they have got it in for you, you are, they'll alienate you, they'll isolate you. Very, very, very difficult to contend with that, isn't it?
All I'll say is I went through that from 2000 and I'm just remembering 2004. Yeah, 2004. Peter Dowd had moved out of Derby Ward. He ran off to St Oswald's because there was a safe seat. Basically, Derby Ward members decided to deselect Mark Dowd, his brother, who was then the chair of Mersey Trouble. And some people will recall the Labour group that happened shortly afterwards and how one of them two had to restrain the other one because the other one wanted to land one on me. Victor Roll of some within the Labour group when things aren't going to how they wanted them. And when it came to Mark's deselection, they had regional party involved. They tried to get the national party involved just basically to save him. And as it turned out, elderly, poorly Labour councillor up in Netherton passed away, and Mark slipped into his. They can't even have been cold at his shoes by that time. I mean, he literally slipped into them and became a councillor in St Oswald's with his brother.
It looks like there's kind of a bit of a history of this area as well. I mean, I know Liverpool was one of the last major cities to have Labour MPs because people used to vote on religion. But I think that the issue we've got is that you have parties that tend to dominate local politics. The Liberal Democrats were in charge for a bit in Liverpool, and now it's very much a Labour thing. Now, there was a lot of corruption, alleged corruption, about the Liverpool Council as well, which involved, it was a huge national story too. Now, one of the reasons you say you're an independent, you're very concerned about nepotism, cronyism, etc. locally.
Yeah.
And there's a few independents who stood in Sefton. We know there's independents who stood in McGall and in West Lancashire as well.
Yeah.
And is it just the fact that you can become someone who doesn't have that party loyalty and can just focus on local issues? Is that why it appeals to you? And also, how do independents work together and how do they break that party stranglehold?
Well, I think the most important thing is to say independents are exactly that. The answer to no, the answer to you, the people of the ward that they represent. There's no party whips. There's no group leaderships demanding their support and basically saying, if you don't do this, we're not going to, you won't get through the next election, or if you don't do this, you're not getting that job next year. Because, of course, points make prizes. And basically, when it comes to, you do as they're bidden and they'll give you the chair of a scrutiny review committee, which earns you an extra, £4,000 or £5,000 on top of your standard councillor's allowance. Or if you really, really don't mind getting your nose a little bit brown at the end, you'll get a cabinet place, or you can go on an outside board and you can get a double wonga, basically. You get to double the amount then. Currently, cabinet members are on £25,000 plus. Outside bodies, the Merseyside Fire and Rescue, they're on just short of 20,000. Go through some of the others. Chair of Planning. Well, Chair of Planning, of course, has been made a cabinet position, even though, as far as I was aware, the legislation was in place that, you know, as a Chair of Planning, you were meant to be, it was a quasi-judicial position, therefore it's not meant to be party political. So that's why they always kept the chair. But ultimately, that's what they've decided. And the chair of licensing, that's short, just around 20,000 as well now. So I think while people might think, well, this is all about money, this is all about money, it isn't. You've got to remember, it's them positions. And from them positions, you know, it comes back to you. You mentioned him before, and, you know, and I would say when it comes to where I have always been on Europe, and where I am in politics, I'd always say Tony Benn was a hero of mine. I was lucky enough to say I met him on a number of occasions down in the House and at different rallies that he attended. And I would always say his five questions to about politics and why you're in politics and what you want to achieve in politics and how can people get rid of you if they've had enough of you, and who you're accountable to, and whose interests you're actually doing the politics for. And I think all those five questions are as relevant now as they were when Ben first came up with them, and probably will remain so, because they are the basic tenets. When it comes to the Nolan principles, I would actually say the Ben principles should have, whether it's because the five questions, what power have you got? Where did you get your power from? In whose interest do you use it? To whom are you accountable? How do we get rid of you if we've had enough?
Yeah. I mean, those principles as well, the kind of Nolan principles about how MPs should behave and politicians should behave, what Ben said there, we've seen in the last few years what happens when the theory of the good man who comes into politics with good intentions. We've seen on both sides of the Atlantic, in terms of the Anglo-Saxon world, what happens when you get people who don't follow that. So what you're saying, John, is that as an independent, you're representing the local area, you're free of ideology, there's more accountability, etc. It can be very hard for independents to get the message out there without that kind of party recognition. And I think that's been one of the issues in the Sefton elections, where I think Bobby Brennan mentioned it previously, that Labour can afford to lose hundreds of seats in Sefton wards but still win, and it's very hard to get your message out there. Now, because of that, it's hard to get around that without lots of income and lots of networks to support you. We can talk about that in a minute, but do independents work together? And I know there's a lot of independents in Liverpool. I know in West Lancashire, the independents have a small group, a loose group with similar ideas, and they work together on certain issues. How have you planned to work together with other independents around Sefton and the Liverpool area? Is that something which is considered?
Well, I was at Liberate Liverpool, their meeting last Monday night. I'm watching it from afar by using social media. Also, I'm speaking with the McGull and Lydiate community, independent community councillors and candidates. I'm in contact with them. I'm also in contact with some of the Liverpool community independents as well, Alfie and Alan and a few of the others, as well as speaking with other political parties such as the Greens in Liverpool and the Greens in Sefton as well. As I said, I totally agree. Bobby was quite right. You know, Labour can lose a couple of hundred votes from their tally and still win handsomely. And I think if ultimately, as a candidate, yes, okay, you know, nobody, if you're driven to just want to stand just because you want to win the seat, well, you wouldn't stand as an independent and think it's going to happen to you. That would be naive. It's a case of you stand as an independent and you probably stand and stand and stand and stand. There's a Labour Party member now who stood year in, year out in Nether Norrell for many, many years. He's now in the Labour Party, but stood for another party against Labour councillors in the past. Still the same individual he always was. Yeah. He's still very active in the trade union movement. He's somebody who should have been a Labour councillor many, many, many years ago. Before it, you know, when I was first getting involved in the party, he should have been, because genuine champion of the people sort of individual. And I won't name him, because me naming him will probably bring him, he'll probably get brickbats thrown at him for me talking about him in a positive light. And as I said, yeah, he's a party member now, so I won't name him. But yeah, he's somebody who should have been. Not only is his heart and his head in the right place, but he also, everything that he's a socialist. He genuinely is a good socialist, and respect where respect's due, he is a good socialist, and he tries to live that life as a good socialist as well. So yeah. Anyway,
it is hard though, because to stand as an independent, you're trying to shine light on things, particularly in the Sefton area.
That's what you've got to aim for.
Yeah, and I've had leaflets through in local elections in my ward, Oral and Netherton. And I've had leaflets for yourself last year, and there was another guy recently, etc., etc. And again, you get a leaflet through. It's hard to really know and to really gauge what that person truly stands for. Now, obviously, the more independents are elected, they can then pool together and say, is what we stand for, is our commonality. And it's about getting to that critical mass, which you know that they've done in West Lancs in recent years. Because when you're in a party and then you leave, you've kind of gained a reputation. But when you are trying to stand as an independent, coming in from the cold, as it were, it's very, very hard to get a foothold in things. And I think in the Sefton example, I often think about, you know, ancient Greece, where they used to pick lots and someone had run for a few years. And I honestly think it'd be 10 times better in parts of Sefton if we did that. where we didn't have these local elections where the turnout's low, the Labour Party win by default. I remember reading your literature and the literature of a guy who stood recently, and I kind of know the inside story, but most people don't. So you're like mentioning things, and I go, I know what you're talking about here, but a lot of people don't, and there's very little media coverage, and it's sewn up for them, isn't it? And it's very, very hard. But I think you are shining light on places, and you are trying to get to a point where there's a critical mass, etc. But it is very difficult. And I think that in any place where one party dominates, I think that this is the same the world over. If you go to other parts of the country, and it might be a different party, it's not always the principles of the party which are the issue. It's the people in the party and the fact that they've been there for a long time.
It is, and you know, it's exactly that. The sorts of individuals we're talking about, you could transplant them out of Google, take them down to leafy Hertfordshire, put them under a Tory banner, and install them into the local council, and you'd find that still cope. And you could get their contemporaries in Hertfordshire and bring them up to Google and change them, put them under the red banner, and you'd find they'd pick up very quickly. They'd pick up the reins of what's going on in Bootle, and the fiefdom would continue, because ultimately that's what power does.
Corrupts them.
Power corrupts, absolutely. Absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And I think that's the problem with local politics.
Absolutely.
Should be about local people who want to make a difference, not necessarily under party banners. It should be when it comes to, you can't take philosophy and political ideology out of anyone, because ultimately if you're interested in people and you're interested in politics, you're ultimately going to fall into being part of the political spectrum. You're going to be on the left or the right or the middle, but even in the middle, you're more leaning towards the right or you're more leaning towards the left. It's just how politics is. But what you really want is people who can say, okay, here's the Nolan principles. Can I uphold all the Nolan principles? Could I, if you're on the left, well, I would actually say, if you're interested in politics, can you answer them questions of Tony Benn, and honestly say, I can answer all of them and justify the reason why I should be interested in politics, and accept that if I become unaccountable to the people that elect me, I should expect them to get rid of me. And the problem, to some extent, when it comes to local politics, is that doesn't happen. It becomes entrenched. You know, the reason why people go to, they join the Labour Party in Bootle, they go to the first branch party, and very quickly they're sussed out by the local council, because the local councils think, this person's going to be, in a year or two's time, this person's going to be interested in taking my seat off me. And they're a board member. And I live, I don't live in the ward, so let's get rid of this person. And then, of course, you have to be fairly thick-skinned to keep on turning up and knowing that. Because, of course, the Labour Party, you've been in the party yourself, but every organisation has an acronym. The CLP, the BLP, the LGC, the National Party, and all the local government committees and the CCG and all this sort of stuff. And they talk, when they talk and give councillors reports, they talk in all the anachronisms, because they're talking to their own mates who are also know what they are, because they're also councillors. And of course, the idea is to cut you away and to make you feel, well, I'm going there, giving up once every month, I'm going to the branch, and I might as well sit there and do a crossword, because they never talk to me. They're never interested in what I have to say. And they're not willing to, give me a dictionary of terms and a glossary of terms and to help me know when they're talking about the BLP, the CLB, the LDC, and all. And so I can actually sit and see, that's what it is. And, I can interpret now what they're actually saying. That ain't going to happen. That's not going to happen. But I'm not just saying that's what happens in Bootle. I think that happens in Southbourne when it comes to the Tories and probably the Lib Dems. Probably happens in the Greens when they come along and they fear that this young pup has came along and wants next thing he's going to want to, or she's going to want to take my position.
One thing I'd say, it is, and that's why we need to shine a light on these things. And I've experienced what you just said in the local Labour Party, and I've been to the action groups. I went to the action group in Southport, where you had quite a good debate between some of the Tories and some of the Liberals. And I went to a Bootle one, and no one even spoke, because obviously they were all Labour. There was a party line. No one even spoke. There are issues when one party dominates, and obviously we need to try and encourage discussion. Transparency is good, because you say, right, what's going on? And you need to spend time saying, oh, okay, as a new member, here's how it works, et cetera, et cetera. But the way I got treated in the local Labour Party when I went was appalling, and I thought, you wouldn't want anything to do with these people. And that's what they want you to feel. They want you to say.
That's exactly it.
Yeah, they're thinking, well, this guy's just give up his evening. Let's make sure he doesn't want to give up any more evenings and he stays at home next time, because, you know, we can make it quite unpleasant. Now, there are people who aren't like that. I will say I've encountered some people who are very welcoming and very forthcoming, but I'll tell you what, there's a brick wall whenever you try, whenever I try to get involved in local Labour politics, a real brick wall.
What I would say to you, Tim, is also, you know, one, you can put more than a few words together in a sentence.
Yeah.
Two, you're obviously fairly well read and intelligent enough to know you look around the subjects. So you're not just, you know, your Sunday morning is probably Coombsberg followed by Channel 4. I do it myself, so I watch. I love Current Affairs, so my wife will tell you sometimes, especially when there's a big story on. It's literally I just flick between the news channels and watch different journalists giving it, from the BBC, from Sky. From I've started watching Catching, you know, because yes, they are. I would say it's the most probably right wing. GB News is probably the most right wing news outlet now in the UK.
Yeah.
But I've got to be honest. I used to watch Russia. Russia Today as well when they had Alex Salmond on and the Gorgeous George on as well.
Galloway.
I quite like listening to Galloway, and I know, you know, what he talks about and what he genuinely is two different things. But you know, that's common in politics, you know.
But the thing is with politics, John, I've watched some of those channels. I can't watch GB News or Fox News, which is the right wing kind of US one, because they genuinely upset me. But you can watch things critically and read between the lines and see behind what's going on, and still watch them and not be, you know, consumed by them, et cetera. Yeah. And that's one of the things with critical thinking and understanding, because we all need to know what's going on. Like, getting into politics is like learning the language. You have to learn the grammar, the way things are done, be familiar with the institutions, the political culture, et cetera, the ideologies, and then you get like au fait with it all. But I mean, I can watch something and go, well, that's ridiculous, or that's an interesting point, I hadn't thought of it like that, et cetera. Yeah. You've got to have your mind open and willing to be changed. And that's why this kind of opinion-based media is dangerous. Yeah. Social media, some of the stuff I've seen on social media in the last few years has terrified me. I'm not just from the right, I'm talking like from the left, on the left.
Ultimately, you've got to remember, people always think of, but a spectrum is actually a full circle. So of course, extremes of the left and extremes of the right are virtually the same. One was Nazism, and the other one was called extreme communism, you know, and what Hitler was getting up to and what Stalin were getting up to was virtually the same, but they were meant to be the other end of the political spectrum, but they weren't. It was the circle had come round and they were virtually touching nose to nose, you know, the politics of what they could do in between gulags and concentration camps were virtually the same. And that's what history teaches us, that, you know, you've got to know your history and you've got to understand political history and history itself to make sure that we don't repeat the same mistakes that we seem to do year in, year out.
But the social media stuff has been very, very scary. The oversimplification, joining groups.
Like, I've never watched the Tate Brothers, but just by reading some of the stuff that they've got away with, it's questionable.
That's just one example. Some of the groups I've been in, they call it like an echo chamber. You join groups that give you what you want, and Facebook gives you what you want, and all the algorithms and all that. Twitter is one of the most disgusting things I've seen. And again, you get what you want when you follow people, but it just gives you an emotional feedback mechanism because they're trying to keep you on there to make more money. But opinion media and the lack of the move away from traditional media, and by the way, traditional media, there was a lot of just consensus politics and nonsense, let's not upset the apple cart, like the BBC, you know, it's not radical, is it? You know, people on the right say it's got a left-wing bias, like it's a conservative institution, you may pay lip service to the two-party system and stand up for, like, you know, identity politics issues.
It you know always has, you know. You go back and you know, it's like recently there was you were watching The Crown, I think it was on, and you know, one of the ladies in waiting to the Queen was, and it was her who recently went and upset the black activist at some sort of hobnobbing event in London, and you realise that was Marmaduke Hussey's wife, Marmaduke Hussey, who was the chairman of the BBC, and you say. And you see where all the tentacles of politics have wrapped themselves around individuals and organisations like the BBC, and virtually anything and everything is, you know, there's these tentacles of power that are everywhere. Yeah, anyway, besides that, basically, what I am doing when it comes to turning a light on, regularly put in freedom of information requests about all sorts of things. I do have a number of people inside the council who let me know things that don't sit right with them. So they will share their concerns with me. And as I said, it's not I only do this at campaign times. I don't. I'm constantly writing FOIs, speaking to journalists with The Echo and with The Post and other organisations. And the idea is constantly to try and focus the light into the mirror and trying to say, okay, do people understand what this link is to that?
Can you just say what the mirror is to people listening? Sorry, when you say the mirror.
As I said, when I'm talking about the mirror, it tends to be the things that the local council or members of the council don't want the wider populace to know about. Yeah. So ones that I'm currently working on is one regarding Sefton Arch, which is the Archangel, which is the pendant system. That's something I'm currently working with some people. Yeah.
So you consider yourself an activist, a local activist and journalist, as well as a potential independent councillor? That's something you've said.
I think the idea is to constantly prod away or seek to shine the light in, to see what's going on. Just so ultimately people have the right to vote how they see fit. And if they want, you know, it comes back to what you said before, you know, you could put a rocking horse with a red rosette on in Boole and they'd get elected. And that, I totally accept that. But as people are becoming more politically savvy and politically more aware, I think you are getting people who are start to think politics is in, and younger generations, it's not, they are becoming more politically educated and aware that some of the things that are being done in their name and aren't, don't sit right with them, again, it's a the problem is they turn up at the CLP, they turn up at the branch party, or they turn up somewhere, and then they get very quickly virtually shown out the door by the status quo, because they fear these individuals coming in and wanting to upset the apple cart. And that's, but I don't mind saying I'm somebody who likes to upset the apple cart, and standing as an independent to me is partly about offering myself to the people, the voters, to the communities as somebody who wants better for them, who believes that they deserve better. And it's a partnership between the electorate and myself. That's how I was really when I was in Derby Ward. I was very, as a Labour councillor, was very, very hands-on. You know, there's people in the Derby Ward Labour Party would still probably say I was very, very, you know, I was doing two surgeries a week. My background is I used to do, and I still do, welfare rights, representation and appeals. I still help people with forms, because we're all different what makes the world such an interesting place is that we're all different. And over the years, I've refined and refined and refined my abilities when it comes to representation at appeals and stuff. So I used to occasionally do MP surgery. Sometimes in politics, there's things you have to do.
Yeah, and absolutely.
You have to stand up and be counted. And, you know, it goes back to, is it Manic Street Preachers, with if you tolerate this, then
the children will be next. Yeah. I say that. That's one of my mantras, that when I'm in a situation, as a teacher and stuff, and in education, you think, you know.
Yeah, well, it's exactly that. It's that, and my other one is tub thumping by Chumbawamba. I get knocked down, but I get up again. Being independent is about tub thumping, I tell you. That's the truth. Being an independent, standing as an independent, whether you're an independent from a left-wing perspective or a right-wing perspective, or even just wanting to be an independent, stand in the middle, you've got to have that tub thumping sort of mentality. You've got to, I get knocked down, but I get up again. That's what politics is about, and having a set of beliefs and having a moral code and using a moral compass to help people in their life. I could give you a set of people who you could speak to, and they'd all say, well, John's done this for me, none of them. But it's about my own moral compass. I do it. I don't charge for doing it. I do surgery work, as in counsellor's surgery work. And I've never ever stopped to think, from when I first started helping the Little Ward counsellors back in the early 90s through to, 30 years on, I still do stuff for people, housing issues, all sorts of stuff in all the wards in Bootle. And I help people in Crosby, I help people in Thornton, and it doesn't really matter. It's a case of the stuff I've got knowledge of, and I can show people how to get through the maze that is sometimes what local government is. And that's part of what I offer to people, is that they'll get a strong community voice, and they'll also get somebody who's willing to do my very best to try and resolve their issues if I can.
Brilliant. Just one last thing, just in relation to Brexit. There's people like Tony Benn with the more kind of left-wing criticisms of the EU as like a business institution or a capitalist institution that countries should be able to nationalise, etc. There's also, I think we mentioned earlier, like Larry Elliott in The Guardian has put a bit of a leftist kind of slant on what Brexit might have been. To what extent do you find that the kind of UKIP vision, Farageist vision, kind of Johnsonian vision has contaminated the Brexit project? Do you think that opportunities were missed if it would have been a different type of government, etc.? What's your view on how it's kind of manifested since 2016?
I would say, as a Brexiteer, and I still remain a Brexiteer, some of the things that have been allowed to transpire. My view on the EU and where I stood on it. It was always in the Tony Benn camp, which was the idea of a periphery and a centre. And London, Brussels, and Paris, and to some extent Berlin, were the centre of Europe, and everywhere else was on the periphery and even on the tertiary of it. So what we were getting in Bootle, Merseyside, the northwest of England, was the crumbs off the plate, where the monies that were going into Europe and disappearing into Europe, you know, people were getting sold a pop all the time. They honestly believed, oh, let's do this to Stanley Road, let's do that to Stanley Road, let's do this in Bootle. But, you know, there was never any joined up thinking. You know, yes, it looked lovely for the people who went to work in the tax office, or they went to work in Sefton, in Bootle, Trinity Road area, that round that way. But of course, at the end of the day, they were walking down to Oriel Road station or into the Strand and getting, or jumping in their cars and going up to Formby, Southport, or even out of the borough. So it was very nice for them. But what you were finding is, you know, it's a case of the old Victorian houses with their grands, you know, Georgian fronts, but at the back, you know, there was people living in squalor, 12 to a room, grandparents, parents, grandkids, and, you know, dogs, cats, the goats to milk, if they were lucky. And to some extent, you know, that's what you were getting on Stanley Road. You were getting this veneer of, oh, isn't it great what Europe's doing for us? But then you were going down Queen's Road and realising, you know, massive housing problems, massive drug problems, lots of social deprivation issues. And, you know, you were only talking, well, 100 metres away from each other, but it was another world. And that was the problem. You might say, well, they knocked down a lot of them, you know, big houses down Queen's Road and stuff like that. But I was down there leafleting last year, and you might have given them new houses, but still lots of the same problems down in that same...
So would you argue that the implementation of Brexit has just been mismanaged?
Yes, the problem is the Tories have made an absolute pig's ear of it. And they really have. And, you know, Boris was clever in 2019 by coming up with that, you know, let's get Brexit done, because people were just fed up to the back of teeth. So he was going to get a landslide out of it and did. But that was hoodwinking, you know, the electorates into the red wall seats. They were all hoodwinked over to vote for Tories. Again, it's a case of the current political system and the current political class, and I mean the class right across the political spectrum, to some extent have failed Brexit, you know, and it's like the Labour Party, you know, you've still got inside the Labour Party, you've still got people who would still like to have another referendum, and, you know, and I think they honestly believe, I know Keir Starmer said, well, this is where we are now. You know, what we'll be looking is for stronger links, but not rejoining. But I don't believe that his aim isn't in time to have another referendum. You say, as somebody who's a Democrat, you say, fair enough, you know, you've got to maybe revisit it at some time, but you can't then turn around to SNP Scotland and say, well, you can't have one. You've had it, and that's the end. You know, I personally believe the days of the referendum in the UK are gone. I think Cameron believed, because he got the proportional representation referendum done, and killed that off. And then he killed off the SNP's independence one. And he genuinely thought he could deliver the third one, which was his number three, was Brexit. And he thought he would get a Remain vote and that would be the end of it. And he'd have been able to slay all the unionist and EU dragons very, very quickly, or all within one parliament, and got rid of the Lib Dems, and basically been able to turn around and say, we're staying first past the post. This is how we should be. The problem with the Labour Party is, yes, they might win a general election. The writing seems to be on the wall at this moment in time that they win the next general election. But then you say, well, will first past the post keep them there? Well, it might do for a generation. You might, I can still remember 1st of May 1997 and the Labour government, and for the next 13 years, I can still... By the time Blair went in, 2008, I think it was a case of they'd lost the direction and purpose that they came in. And in 97, they really did have an agenda for change.
Do you think the voting system, it was a bit naive to think that voting system would always protect them, because it very quickly turned against the Labour Party? But I mean, even then, I think in 2010, and even 2010, Labour nearly, didn't really lose that one by that much. Yeah. Yeah. It's all ifs and buts. Listen, John, we're going to have to cut time here, because I've had well over an hour of your time. What I'll do is thanks for coming on. Thanks for being an independent activist and councillor, or someone standing and shining a light on things.
You take care.
Cheers, John. Thanks for your time, mate. I'll see you soon. Bye. Ta-ra. Bye. Bye. Bye.